Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And good Tuesday afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the show. Penn State getting ready for its showdown with Boston College in the Big Ten ACC Challenge coming up tomorrow night in the Bryce Jordan Center. It's a 9:15 start tomorrow night. Meanwhile, Bucknell's back in action tonight, 7 o'clock in Soica, as they take on Dartmouth this evening, looking to get back on track, looking for their sixth win of the year. So it's Bucknell at home at Soica tonight with Dartmouth at 7. Penn State and BC tomorrow night in the Jordan Center at 9:15 as part of the Big Ten ACC Challenge. The all Big Ten teams were announced last night. Media and coaches, we're going to run it all down for you with analysis as well. Later in the show, Rich Scarcella, the Reading Eagle, and his perspective on the Nittany Lions season, and Tony Mancuso, who works in the football office, will be joining us as well. But first, above the noise, here is Dan Patrick.
I really need a used car.
Sunbury Motors has lots full of used cars.
But it has to be a good used car.
Well, they're not good.
What?
They're great. Sunbury Motors has over 300 used vehicles to choose from. Cars, SUVs, and trucks so good, we wouldn't sell them if we wouldn't drive them. That's probably why we consistently sell over 200 cars a month. And when it comes to new, Sunbury Motors is the largest Ford dealership in the Central Susquehanna Valley. Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices.
And I'm a smart shopper, and I know what the price should be for the car I want.
Well, here at Sunbury Motors, you get our lowest price promise. We research prices on used cars so much that if you find a better deal, we'll beat it. That's a promise. So here's your keys.
Thanks.
Take a test drive today at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and our Kia dealerships at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Shop 24/7 and see our inventory at sunburymotors.com. That's sunburymotors.com. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Welcome back to the show. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. We'll hear from Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle, next half hour. We're joined by Kevin Herr.
How are you,
good
sir?
Good to have my co-host back and in gear again.
Yeah, and I looked through the TMZ portion, as you always like to dub that I do. Tulane and East Carolina going to the Big East. That doesn't sound very entertaining.
What about Grand Canyon State to the WAC? How about that one?
That one probably interested me just about as much as Tulane and East Carolina going to the Big East.
Well, tradition's gone.
Well, you know what the Big East stands for? Anything east of the Pacific.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see how this all plays out, but you know, tradition has been lost in all of this. And steps forward can be taken and still hold on to things that were the foundations that made growth possible. Now, whether it is a high-profile game like Ohio State, Michigan, or one that is down the ladder of national importance like Lehigh, Lafayette, the traditional games, there's a reason why they're so endearing to everyone. That you get that rivalry build up, especially if one team has the ability to beat the other. They both have the ability to beat each other. That's huge. But I mean, it's interesting that even now you look at the fact that because USC played Notre Dame in the last game of the season, because there's now a Pac-12 championship game, it used to be that UCLA and USC would play Thanksgiving weekend and then Notre Dame would be the next weekend. Well, now with the Pac-12 championship game, you have to move that up. So instead, UCLA closes out its regular season with Stanford, and now they're going to play again. Well, that last weekend should be the Apple Cup. Washington State, Washington. Oregon, Oregon State. Stanford, Cal. Stanford, Cal, I think, was at the beginning of November. UCLA, USC. Arizona, Arizona State. You know, Texas and Texas A&M don't play each other anymore. Now, because of the crossover game of the Big Ten, they maintained the integrity of keeping Ohio State, Michigan as the last game. They could have put them in the same division and done the same thing, but still, they did it. And Clemson still plays South Carolina last game. Florida played Florida State, right? Georgia, Georgia Tech. Penn State doesn't play Pitt. And when Pitt comes back on the schedule in 16 and 17, the games will be in September. That's better than no games.
Penn State did have Michigan State on the schedule at the last game for a long time, and that never really took off as any kind of rivalry, even though they had the, was it the Land-Grant trophy?
Yeah, the Land-Grant monstrosity.
That is a big trophy.
It took four people to carry it. I'm not kidding you.
Wow.
They played that game 18 straight years. Near the end, it was starting to get some traction. Near the end, it took a long time to get some traction as the last game. It just, it doesn't have the same lure as Penn State Pitt.
What happened to Rivalry Weekend? I mean, I remember ESPN used to play it up something fierce.
Well, it happened because of all the conferences changing, everything changing over. Now, in the Pac-12, you still have what I'm talking about, but in other words, but you had Cal and Stanford earlier in the month. And had UCLA playing Stanford last game. You're like, that's because of the Notre Dame scheduling, because of the Pac-12 championship game. Now, next year, UCLA and USC will be the last game because the game with Notre Dame, a non-conference game, is in the middle of the year. It's in October. Every time they play in South Bend, it's in October. You know, Missouri and Kansas don't play each other in basketball anymore. Not in the same conference. Kentucky and Indiana are going to play in basketball. They've had a great rivalry. That has to do with politics between the two schools and not with the conference.
But as a fan, my biggest problem is I have to have a cheat sheet in front of me right now to figure out who's in what league or who's in what conference, and is it just for football or is it for basketball or is it for lacrosse? I can't even tell anymore.
Well, you know, this comes down to football basketball rivalries,
right? I mean, I was exaggerating, but I just can't tell anymore though who's in what conference,
right? And I don't think anybody really can now. Maryland, supposedly the ACC is going to court about the $50 million deal, and they're gonna force them to pay it. But in the end, because of the money they can make out of the Big Ten, it'll still pay off for them. It'll still pay off for them. And it's just going to take a while, you know, because the money will grow. And I don't know what the revenue sharing is going to be with Maryland and Rutgers initially. I think Nebraska gradually gets into it, and I think they might be, they had partial last year, but I think they get full this year. Everybody got $24.5 million this year. And, you know, but in the end, you know, all this is about cash. It's about money. It's about generating revenue, right? And I've heard people, of course, put down the money part of it, okay? But some of the people I've seen put down the money part of it are hypocrites. And here's the reason why. These are the same people who write stories saying, look, you got to have Title IX. Okay. How do you pay for it? Whoops. How do you pay for it? You have to be able to fund women's lacrosse, women's soccer, softball, women's gymnastics, field hockey, cross country, just like you also need to fund baseball, men's soccer, men's volleyball, men's gymnastics. Wrestling's endowed at Penn State, but not everywhere else. Ice hockey, women's hockey. You know, you need to be able to pay for it. Now, you look at Penn State. Penn State's athletic department is autonomous financially from the university. They don't take money from the university coffers. Their budget comes from what they get from ticket sales, football, basketball, women's basketball, hockey, whatever it happens to be, into a pool. And, of course, the divided money from the Big Ten, from the television contract. Penn State also gets money from its Learfield contract. So, you have to, I mean, that... You, in order to make the progress that has been made with Title IX, and Title IX is progress, okay? Look at all the girls out there that now have dreams of going to college and playing sports that are at the ages of 6 to 10 now or in junior high or in high school. Those dreams are possible because of all the programs available. Also, if you're a boys soccer player, you can play men's soccer at Division I level. You can do so because of the funding that happens from football and these television contracts. And from men's basketball. Those are the two sports that ring up profits. Then the profits are then depleted by what everybody else needs in order to properly compete at a high level. You look here, the NCAA women's volleyball tournament is about to start. Penn State's number one. They're one of the favorites. People here love their volleyball. They drew over 5,000 fans to see Penn State in women's soccer with Stanford back in September. Now they're in the College Cup. They're playing in San Diego. We're going to get one of the players on later this week. So the investment financially that comes from these contracts allows them to compete at the highest level because you have to pay for school for scholarships, room and board, things like that, training tables for everybody. You need money to do it. And the worst thing I see in athletics is cutting sports. Maryland cut 7. Right? Maryland cut 7. A lot of men's programs have gone by the wayside. Well, men deserve opportunities too.
I think you mentioned it when we were together on Friday. What numerically, for Maryland to make the move to the Big Ten, I mean, how much is it basically for them to make the move? I mean, what do they monetarily gain out of this?
Oh, they're going to go from about $17 to $18 million a year to eventually, by 2017, 2018, $46 million.
Yeah, that's a fiscally responsible move, I would say.
Well, they're $4.5 million in the hole now. They're $4.5 million in the hole now. And they drop 7 sports. Now they might be able to bring a couple sports back with the money they're getting from the Big Ten. Now, they'll also sell more tickets at Byrd Stadium. When Penn State comes down there, you know, they drew for Florida State, they drew 33,000 for Florida State. One of the top 10 teams in the country. They drew 33,000. Penn State will go there, they'll get 48,000. Ohio State goes there, they'll get 48,000. I mean, just in ticket, I mean, their ticket sales are going to go up. They'll make more. They'll make money from that too. And in the Comcast Center in College Park, it's not going to be a bad day to have Indiana, Michigan, Ohio State, and Michigan State come into the building. Those aren't boring teams. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Lenape Solar Hotline open at 1-800-795-9565. We'll power that up and hear from Rich Scarcell, the Ready Eagles. We continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While your favorite team is driving down the field, you're driving all around looking for a new car, which is driving you crazy. Well, Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices. Our North 4th Street Auto Plaza is stocked full of Ford, Lincoln, and Hyundais. We sell over a couple hundred cars a month. Why? Service and price. With our lowest price promise, if you can find a better price at another dealer on the used car you want, we'll beat it. That's a promise. And our tire rewards program gives you your next set of tires free. Shop the largest Ford dealership online 24/7 at sunburymotors.com. Let's stop in and test drive Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury and our Kia dealership at routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And be ready to tackle the largest inventory and our lowest price promise, selling more cars and satisfying more customers since 1915. Sunbury Motors, sunburymotors.com, the winning team.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Lenape Solar Hotline is powered up at 1-800-795-9565. Powered by Lenape Solar. You can go to lenapesolar.com. And on the Lenape Solar Hotline, time to bring in the outstanding beat writer from the Reading Eagle, who gets the honor of the first question every Tuesday. That's happened through attrition, Rich Scarcell. Rich, thanks so much for being with us. Thanks for being on board.
Thanks, Steve. I think it's just because I'm an old guy.
Well,
that's why.
Imagine how I feel. First of all, I have to ask you, your son was an intern at one point. How well is he doing right now?
Oh, that's nice of you to ask. He is his name is Eric, and he is a 2009 graduate of Penn State, and he is the director of public relations and media relations for the Reading Phillies. And he's had a busy last month with their rebranding. Let's just put it that way.
Rebranding, new uniform, everything. They've changed everything up.
Yeah. They changed everything except it's still Reading, and it is the Reading Fightin' Phils. That is the new name.
Okay, well, that's not bad. At least they kept it incorporated. That's good.
Yes.
And is Eric enjoying the job? Because I know he's the one that he could have been a writer, could have gone into broadcasting. He decided to go into quote sports information public relations. Is he enjoying it?
Yes. Yeah. He very much so. He loves minor league baseball, and he loves working for the Fightin' Phils. They're very good people to work for. So he's. There have been moments of challenges, but he's enjoyed it.
Well, this Penn State football season, what kind of football season did you think Penn State was capable of the 1st of July? Then what kind of season did you think Penn State was capable of on the 1st of August? And then how do you feel about it with the 1st of December coming up?
That's a really good question, Steve. I really thought July 1st, I thought they could win 9 or 10 games. I really did. I believe that. And I thought a lot of the preseason publications, one of which I write for, Lindy's, really undervalued Penn State. And so that, having said that, we move forward to August 1st. I thought 7-5. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, this is... If you ask me September 10th, I probably was, I don't know, about 7-5, maybe 6-6, maybe. And, I was wrong. I was wrong on both accounts. And I think what they did to win 8 games, considering everything they faced and everything they endured, is a remarkable accomplishment.
When you talk to the players on this team, Rich, and you spend a lot of time either on teleconferences with them or actually in the media room after games, home and away, what did you see in them that allowed everybody to label them a special group?
I saw a commitment to each other, number one, a commitment to their coaching staff, and a commitment to their university. I saw extremely strong-willed people determined that they weren't going to let anything ruin their season, especially the seniors, ruin their senior season. I have never seen, I can't recall a Penn State team like this. I've tried to, maybe the 05 team. That's the only one that compares to me because of what they were coming out of the 5 years previously. But this team was just so determined to have a successful season, and they did.
Matt McGloin's season. Give me an idea, the what you saw, the differences in Matt McGloin, and what the system then meant to Matt McGloin.
Well, I thought he was the right guy all along. I believe he should have been the guy last year, but he wasn't the whole season. He alternated. But if anybody would have predicted 3,300 yards, 24 touchdown passes, and 5 interceptions, they'd be lying to you if they said they predicted that. I thought he would have a good year in this offense. I thought his percentage, his completion percentage, would go up, which it did. But he was as productive and as valuable a Penn State quarterback as any that I've covered.
Yeah, you know, it's and totally different too. I mean, this is probably the best pure drop back quarterback season for Penn State, maybe since Kerry Collins. Best pure drop back quarterback.
I would absolutely agree with you on that.
Because I thought I told Jack Ham in the preseason. He said, "What do you think McGloin's success will be?" I said, "If he can throw more than 20 touchdown passes and keep his interceptions in single digits," and it turned out he's 24-5.
Yeah, that was realistic. I mean, if he hit, I thought before the season started, you know, you lose your number one receiver, Justin Brown, and I thought, okay, that's you know, we didn't know what Penn State had in Allen Robinson or Kyle Carter or the other receivers, and I'm astounded when I sit back and I thought about this today when he was named one of the finalists for the Burlsworth Trophy, which goes to the nation's top former walk-on. I'm astounded and admire him so much for the year that he had. I think what he did and what Bill O'Brien and his staff did, and Matt was the first to credit them, I think will go down as one of you talk about improved player, most improved player in the Big Ten. I don't think there's any doubt he was. But just one of the more surprising and terrific seasons that a Penn State quarterback has ever had.
You're supposed to cover the game, watch the game, but you're also a human being trying to watch the game and cover the game. How entertained were you by Penn State's offense?
Oh, you know, very entertained. I have to say, as somebody watching football, you know, you have to sit through 12 games or 13 games. It's a very fun offense to watch. It's a very productive offense. It works in the Big Ten, and I think I've heard some people say this. When you look at it, it's one of the few pure pro-style offenses in the Big Ten. And it's clear they're doing it the best. I mean, they did it the best this season. But it's a pleasure to watch. And, you know, especially the struggles offensively last year, it really was like night and day.
Mac McWhorter and the job he did with the offensive line, can you explain what you saw in their progress this year?
Well, let's put it in this context, too, Steve, and I'm not telling you anything new. Penn State returned two starters on offense, Matt McGloin, Matt Stankiewicz. Matt McGloin was a starter in name because he had more starts than anybody last year. To when you think they averaged almost 30 points a game, they averaged 417 yards a game, and it goes to the offensive line. And what he did with this offensive line was nothing short of, I don't want to say it, nothing short of remarkable. It really was. And I hate to use that word again, but that's what it was. I mean, they were as physical as any offensive line that I saw this year. You know, and they played Nebraska, Wisconsin, and Ohio State. And they didn't get pushed around. They may have gotten beaten in spots, but overall, especially the interior of that line, they were extremely physical, and that was one of the goals of the players, to be extremely physical each week.
I kidded with Jack Hamm on the broadcast Saturday that I don't think Zach Zwinak had 36 carries in the spring, let alone having 36 in a game. His emergence, what did you see in conjunction with the physical offensive line you talked about?
What I saw from him is he is a strictly downhill runner, north to south, always falls forward, rarely goes down on first contact. I would love to see what his yardage was after contact. I was astonished. Look at after the Virginia game, when I think he carried once or twice in that game for I don't know what, not hardly anything. And you were going to tell me that this kid would have a 1,000-yard season. It's incredible. And
he had 998 yards the last nine games. He had three carries for 2 yards through three games.
Right, right. And Steve, it's amazing to me. And the kid, I think he's a terrific running back. I mean, he may not have breakaway speed, but he reads things well. He's patient. He breaks tackles. Like Matt Stankiewicz told me last night, he said, you know, he falls forward all the time. When there's nothing there, he's gaining 4 yards. He's a really, really good running back. I was figuring out real quick, and my math isn't good, but I think in conference play, he ended up as the fourth leading rusher, and that includes Braxton Miller and Taylor Martinez and Denard Robinson and, you know, all the quarterbacks. I voted him on the second team. I could say it now. I thought he deserved a place on the second team on the all-conference team, but you know, that's the way it goes. Nobody had heard of him before this season, so you know how that works sometimes.
Yeah, you and I are the two voters for Penn State, so. Not people that cover Penn State. I mean, it's, you know, you're just selected and designated to do it. And we're not, you know, beforehand, we're not supposed to talk about who we vote for. Now, when it comes to this Penn State defense, front seven was supposed to be, you know, the heart and soul of the defense. And I think as advertised, we saw that.
Very much so. Oh, yeah. I mean, Jordan Hill had a terrific season up front. I think, and especially his performance in that game Saturday against Wisconsin will be remembered for a very, very long time. Basically playing on one leg and to play the way he did, to dominate the line of scrimmage like the way he did, especially late in the game, was he deserves all the credit for that. Obviously the linebackers, they're the best set of linebackers in the Big Ten, I think. I mean, I think there are some really good linebackers in this conference, and I think that the linebacker play, including Glenn Carson, was as good as any I've seen or better. So the front seven, no, that was not a surprise. I thought the secondary played better than I expected. I wouldn't say they would get an A for their, you know, for the end of the year, but I thought they played a lot better than I expected.
Sam Ficken. I told the quarterback club a story after the Virginia game. And I'm about to tell the same story that I've told on the air that same week, but I'll tell it again. Back in 1982, one of the truly great games ever in Beaver Stadium was Penn State, Nebraska.
Sure.
And everyone remembers the drive downfield, the Kenny Jackson catch on fourth down, the Mike McCloskey catch, the Kirk Bowman touchdown catch. What is forgotten about that game is how dominant Penn State was, because Massimo Manco, who had to fill in as a freshman for Nick Gansentino, had been hurt, and then Gansentino took over later in the season and was the kicker the rest of the way. But as a true freshman, Manco was the kicker in that game.
Yeah.
He missed four field goals.
Yep.
And after the Bowman touchdown, people forget he missed the extra point. Mm-hmm. And then he bounced back and had one of the great careers ever at Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
The point I was trying to tell everybody there is, like, look, don't judge the kid so early. Let's let him breathe and have some time.
Mm-hmm.
He hit his last 10 kicks, Rich. I mean, what can you say about the poise of a kid that certainly had a lot on his shoulders?
Steve, I will never forget the Virginia game. I don't think for as long as I live, and I will not forget how much empathy I had for him. He was being taunted by the Virginia student section. When he came onto the field at the end of the game to try the field goal, they cheered as loud as they had cheered all game. And, you know, you just... And I talked to people, including my wife, who watched the game on TV back here in Pennsylvania, and they just... And people just felt horrible for that kid. And for him to overcome that, a game like that, when he cost his team the game. I mean, you can't, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. He cost his team the game. To come back and to have the last half of the season or whatever, you know, starting with Iowa, to hit his last 10 field goals, to hit that field goal, I don't care if it made it by an inch, you know, it's truly, and, you know, I admire him more than almost anyone on the team. For him to do that, It's just stunning. I mean, I'm running out of adjectives here, but it is, when you think about it.
All right. Let's get to a couple of other things.
Okay.
Is it an interesting ruling on behalf of the NCAA that preaches student-athletes, but they're going to allow existing players on a team to be recruited while they're going through finals?
I think of all the sanctions, I think that's the one that, to me, was the absolute worst and the most damaging to Penn State, especially in the short term. You brought up a good point. They're going to be going through finals, and they're going to be receiving calls from opposing coach, or, you know, from other coaches to try to get them players to go to other schools. To me, that I understand if they had allowed the guys transfer until the beginning of preseason camp this year, okay, fine. To do it, to allow them a whole other year to do it, to live, you know, to live like that, to, you know, coaches could call for the next 9 months, and for a coaching staff to deal with that, I think it was excessive, and over the line. I do. I mean, we know something bad happened at Penn State, and we all, I mean, I think everybody would agree with that. But this doesn't hurt, this doesn't address the problem. This hurts this team and this coaching staff. And I just thought it was wrong.
And they have enough to deal with because of how they have to reconfigure the football team based on the scholarship sanctions they had to begin with, let alone trying to re-recruit their own kids.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that, to me, that's the one that Bill O'Brien and his staff, that's the hardest and most difficult one to deal with, is that sanction.
Richard, we're going to hold you over into the next half hour just for a little bit, because there's a few more questions I want to ask about Big Ten expansion and the Heisman and things like that. So I want to hold him over into the next half hour, but we need to take a break now. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
I really need a used car.
Sunbury Motors has lots full of used cars.
But it has to be a good used car.
Well, they're not good.
What?
They're great. Sunbury Motors has over 300 used vehicles to choose from. Cars, SUVs, and trucks so good, we wouldn't sell them if we wouldn't drive them. That's probably why we consistently sell over 200 cars a month. And when it comes to new, Sunbury Motors is the largest Ford dealership in the central Susquehanna Valley. Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices.
And I'm a smart shopper, and I know what the price should be for the car I want.
Well, here at Sunbury Motors, you get our lowest price promise. We research prices on used cars so much that if you find a better deal, we'll beat it. That's a promise. So here's your keys.
Thanks.
Take a test drive today at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and our Kia dealerships at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Shop 24/7 and see our inventory at sunburymotors.com. That's sunburymotors.com. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Kevin Herb, white suit, white shoes. Dancing to Disco Inferno by the Tramps.
I'm just trying to picture me being able to dance. That would be a thing all by itself.
I noticed you guys put the holiday party on a night I can't be there.
Yeah, sorry about that. It was a shame, wasn't it, that you can't be there. I felt so bad for you.
I was going to go, too. You know?
Oh, well.
Beautiful Susquehanna Valley Country Club. I mean, what time does this thing start, anyway?
Five.
Oh. When does it end?
Eight.
That's about the time I could get there. I have the chamber show that night.
Yeah, that's because it's Thursday night, so it's the coach's show. Well, you know, I could fill in for you on the coach's show if you'd like.
Well, that's your choice.
I have some good news for you. We have locked in Jim Kizer for Thursday in the 3 o'clock right. hour. The head coach of the Danville Ironmen taking on 13-0 while missing Saturday afternoon in Hershey.
Great. Great. Well, that works out great. And
You know, it's an interesting Danville team. A lot of young players on that team. You know, both teams from this area, Selinsgrove Grove and Danville, have a lot of young players, and they could be good for a while, making it deep into this playoff.
I think it's exciting that we're going into the weekend of December 1st, and two of our District 4 teams are still right there in it.
Oh, absolutely.
Tells you about the brand of high school football in our area. It speaks well for the brand of high school football. Tells you how exciting Friday nights have been in our area up and down the valley. And to have two teams be good enough to emerge to this point, I think this is fabulous for the entire valley and speaks well for the entire valley.
Well, we talked about this many times. And you look at the District 4 tournament, when you have a team in Danville in the top of the bracket and then a team almost at the bottom of the bracket playing in the final of the District 4 playoffs a week ago, that tells you how competitive District 4 AA was this year.
Right, no question. No question about that. So, and I think that we'll get a chance to hear from the coaches later in the week, and I think that's terrific. Adam Rittenberg, by the way, tomorrow, ESPN.com. I'm going to keep Rich Scarcella over. We're going to talk to Rich again about expansion and other things at 4:06. Tony Mancuso will pop him to tomorrow. And then Thursday, Ben Jones, Nate Mink put a bow in the season from StateCollege.com. I'm going to try and get Matt LePay, Greg Sharp on in the Big Ten Championship game. We're going to work on that maybe for Friday. Be fun. Talk to them. Nebraska, Wisconsin playing in the title game. News coming up top of the hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK.